Hey everybody, welcome to Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a weekly movie review podcast that's also a tribute to Siskel and Ebert, hosted by myself, Brett Arnold, and film critic Mark Dusick, where we aim to cover every new theatrical release and every new streaming release every Friday, and we do that in the format that Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert pioneered. It really is that simple. Just to clear the air, amid all the pending litigation, this is not an official RogerEbert.com production. I'm just kidding. Nobody is suing us yet, but it is unofficial. We are just fans of Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel and film criticism and the movies themselves. And Mark's already putting in the work reviewing, I believe Mark reviewed 12 movies this week, which is kind of his whole deal. He does that every week for the past 40 years, something
wait,
like that.
Wait.
I said I was going to keep joking and go up, yes. And that's what I got to do. We're going to hit 1,000 years eventually.
I'm going to be 160 years old by the time we get to mid-season point.
Movie started. Birth of a Nation happened. Mark was there. He reviewed it. He gave it a...
Not favorably. Not favorably.
We should look at that one and see if it stood the test of time. It was a different time, okay? Leave early 1900s Mark alone, okay? Mark has been reviewing movies on markreviewsmovies.com for 20, probably somewhere in 22 to 24. I refuse to learn the actual number. Many years, almost 25, almost a quarter century. I've been doing it for less time, maybe about a decade since living in New York and freelancing and whatnot. Figured why not start a show and get it all done here, because I already like to see everything every week. Why not be the guide for people? Why not help them decide what to see in theaters and try to keep the Roger Ebert at the movies, you know, spirit alive? Because no, there's a lot of podcasts out there reviewing movies and talking about specific movies. There are fewer that do what we do and go as exhaustive as we do. And, you know, I mean, clearly we don't get everything. Mark got 12 this week, and there's still a ton that we're pushing to next week. For some reason, this week was like 20 plus movies. How many are we talking about today? 7. I saw 7, which feels not enough for this week, but also felt like a lot while you're doing 7. It feels like a lot. It felt like I was cramming them. I missed a major release. There's something called Arthur the King, starring Mark Wahlberg and a dog, that is out in theaters now. I should have gone to the screening, decided not to, because, you know, you have to make these decisions, cutthroat decisions, when you have a baby and a life and stuff like that outside of your hobby that doesn't make you any money, that takes up a lot of your time. So I'm getting way too personal today for some reason. Let's give an appeal for listeners to get in on the action. Do you guys like reviewing stuff too? Great. You can review us. Review the Roger Ebert and Me Movie Reviews podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can give us a star rating on Spotify. There are probably other places you can give us a review. If you like work at the New York Times or something, you can give us a review there. That would be awesome. Washington Post, local, even more local stuff. Just talk about us. Put our names in your mouth. What's up, Mark? What's going on?
Not much. Yeah, I felt like I slacked 2 this week just because there were so many.
You did 12 and you felt
I know, like and guys. I felt like I slacked. Yes. That's where my brain is. Man. Don't forget, I have a cough drop in my mouth that I'm trying to finish up before we actually start exchanging opinions and everything. because I'm still have somewhat of the remnants of that cough that I had.
Yeah. So brutal. Thank you for doing it and finding the time. amid all your watching of several movies, I'm glad I found time to talk about 7. Mark actually did like the Mark Wahlberg dog movie. If you
did, I'm disappointed you didn't see it, because I thought we're either going to have like a very surprising agreement or a really good argument about it. And I'm kind of disappointed we're not going to have that conversation.
Well, I feel like I can prejudge it a little bit, because it was directed by the same guy who did the Mark Wahlberg Apple movie that just came out. That we reviewed, called Family Plan. And that was like not just a bad movie, but a very badly directed movie. So that didn't translate to this theatrical movie somehow.
No, it works. I think it works as like an adventure movie, and it works as a touching, you know, man and his dog movie. That's like, oh, okay.
I feel like, isn't this like an SNL sketch come to life? Wasn't there a whole thing where it's like Mark Wahlberg talks to animals and just tells them, like, yes, hey, how do you mother for me?
is the Annie a mother movie?
Yeah. So does that happen? Does he say that to the dog?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately. Mm.
Brian Fellows doesn't show up. No other SNL related things happen.
None of that.
Another movie that's actually like a pretty wide release that I didn't see because there wasn't a screener or a screening for this one, and I didn't have time to see it yesterday when it came out. Mark, of course, made time. The American Society of Magical Negroes. And you were mixed on it. 2.5 out of 4.
Yeah.
So if you want to know more, you can read his review. Anything to say about that one before we get started on the rest?
Only that festival reviews are the bane of film criticism.
Oh, man. That's so true.
Holy
so
crap. This thing got lambasted.
Yeah. It got obliterated out of what festival? I don't even know.
I think it was Sundance. One of the, I think.
Yeah. Bad reviews out of Sundance to the degree of this movie kind of snuck out and got buried and didn't get shown to critics. And apparently, you know, there are people that like it too. And Mark didn't hate it. So it seems like there's merit to it. And I'm very interested in seeing it. And I think that festival hype goes the other way too, because we're going South by Southwest is happening right now. And that is the biggest culprit for me of like overhyping things that are just okay. And everything that's premiered there this week has gotten crazy raves, including the new Alex Garland movie that premiered last night called Civil War, that is getting like 4-star raves from people, including on RogerEbert.com from Matt Zoller sites. So I'm very excited for Civil War because I like Alex Garland, but I also am now very skeptical because it's the South by Southwest audience that says it's really good.
I'm assuming some of them pretend, but you never know.
Some of them. Yeah. You know, I actually did watch like 4 screeners or something from South by, and all were horror stuff, and none of them were beyond 3 out of 5 stars, which is what happens at most festivals. So like, it is what it is, and that's what I expect. So we'll have to see. The jury's still out on Civil War. I'm very excited about it though now.
In regards to American Society, the fact that it got buried at Sundance means that everyone else doesn't get to see it ahead of time.
Yeah, so it sucks.
Like, oh, thanks guys.
Well, if you live in New York, it's playing pretty much everywhere.
Everywhere. It's a wide release, so
it's so weird. So, like, it is playing. You can't see it, but nobody knows it exists. Is the problem
exactly?
Yeah, no marketing.
Much like the American Society itself. That's the gimmick.
Yeah, I don't know what the premise. I saw the premise. I haven't watched the trailer. I read a log line and was like, "That sounds fun. I want to go see that." So I will see it and I'll report back. Whenever I do that. All right, let's get into a movie that came out in limited release last week and is now wider. I don't know how wide it is, but it's called Love Lies Bleeding. It is an A24 movie. It stars Kristen Stewart and Ed Harris and a newcomer. I think it's Katie O'Brien is her name. Let's watch the trailer.
You talked to your dad recently?
Why?
Give us a call.
So where did you appear from? Oklahoma? I've never been anywhere but here. What were you doing with that big girl?
Get a lot of crazy ass foreigners mostly. How's it going, guys?
This here's Jackie.
Hi.
She needs a job. Says she'll do anything.
Yeah, you like guns?
Not really.
What the fuck are you doing here, then? I'm a bit more powerful than a punch. Huh?
Fuck yeah.
I don't know what that trailer is going to give away. We got to stop now. This movie's all about kind of the discovery in the moment and enjoying the ride. So I didn't want to get ahead of anything. Tell me what this movie's about, Mark.
It is a very moody neo-noir set in the 1980s and very much inspired by those sort of 80s neo-noirs like Blood Simple and Body Heat and other ones that aren't springing to mind. But it's that sort of tone and mood and approach that's going for. And it works really well because it has this surprisingly sweet love story at the center of it between Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien's characters. And I was bought at the fact that it takes so much time to actually establish that relationship and how desperate and lonely the two of these people are and how they just kind of cling to each other in almost a codependent way, but not quite. Like, they have their own things going on. They don't need each other in that, in like some kind of an emotional thing. They're just like yeah, they just want each other, and
yeah,
it's good. And so when all of that neo-noir plotting kicks in, you're invested, you're surprised, even though you can kind of tell who's going to get bumped off and why, not how, the how of how the dead body shows up was really, oh, it's good.
It's a moment. It's a moment. It's a gory, it's a nice, it a gory, moment. Practical effect, disgusting moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, it's not giving too much weight, I think, to say, like, it's about covering up the murder and then, you know, trying to evade the cops and Ed Harris's crime boss, who has like a literal backyard graveyard crevice in the middle of the desert full of dead bodies. It's all that
sporting
kind of stuff.
A terrific wig that you saw in the trailer there.
It's amazing.
With the ball down the middle and huge long hair on the sides. Just terrific look. Terrific.
It is a look. It is a look that I think both of us at one point will replicate.
We will get old enough hippie enough and not caring and not giving a shit enough. Yes, it might happen.
So yeah, I mean that's the broad strokes of it. And
I enjoyed it too. I liked it a lot. And I'm gonna stop you there only to say, because when you describe it plot wise, it sounds like such a dime a dozen generic thing. And that's what I like about it, is that Rose Glass, this writer-director, who the only previous film she made is, I believe, another A24 movie called Saint Maud, which is like a religious horror movie that's really good also. She's able to take stock ideas, like this crime neo-noir stuff, and imbue it with characters you don't see in that type of thing, like this lesbian couple at the center. And like, yes, you've seen characters like Ed Harris, but like, he is such, like, the eccentricities, like him eating a lizard at one point or whatever happens. I forget, something weird like that happens. Like, there's this weird little beats throughout that are really enjoyable. It's really wearing its influences on its sleeve. I feel like the visual style is really compelling and it takes huge swings. And I really appreciated like a huge swing it takes in the third act. That's probably going to split the room because it's like taking something, it goes like surreal, would you say, for a moment? Like it kind of escapes the reality of the movie and becomes something different, kind of like the underlying subtext of it kind of spills out into this surreal moment. And I'm not going to ruin it, but I thought it was great, and I think some people will hate it, and I think that's cool that the movie takes that type of ambitious swing. And I also like, Mark, that you could read this movie in like a Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk kind of way with these two characters. Did you ever think about that? How like she is kind of like the roided out version of her, you know, like it's like ego id or whatever you want to call it. It's like the idea of like the person who's, I don't know, the idea of this one person being split into two, and you could interpret it that way if you really wanted to. I just think it's like a rich movie with a lot going on, but really, if you just want to watch it as a crime thriller with a great relationship at the center of it, it really delivers. And it's fun to note that we've got like two lesbian crime caper things in as many weeks or as many months, I guess, because Drive Away Dolls came out last month and is actually now on VOD. If you care about that, you can rent it for $20 or whatever. But we're living in a golden age of lesbian crime caper things. And they're two sides of the same, two completely different sides of the same coin. That movie's funny and wacky and raunchy, and this movie's sexy in a different way and completely, you know, different tonally and violent and stuff.
Yeah, they are very different and also kind of similar. There's a lot of humor in this that I wasn't expecting. Yeah. Stewart's performance is so funny. She's so good, but she's so good here because she's playing a character that you don't always, you kind of get touches of in a neo-noir where, you know, they're in over their heads. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
She really doesn't know what she's doing at times.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Blue Ruin at certain points where you have this ordinary person thrown into this plot and with no idea of what to do. And I appreciated the fact that Glass allows these characters to make mistakes and to have errors in judgment and to just get caught up in the moment of what's happening and to kind of forget the big picture. And isn't that kind of like a love story? Just the whole thing, the neo-noir plot and the love story kind of reflect each other in this weird, sweet, demented way that I really appreciated.
So, yeah. And I brought up Driveaway Dolls just because that same idea is what drives that movie. Like the idea that
They're both period films too. This one's in the 80s and that one was in the 90s. So
right. And like that center romance between the leads or whatever you want to call it, the relationship is like what makes both movies. So they are interesting to compare and they're both worth watching and they're both great. And I don't know. I didn't see the trailer before I watched this movie and I just was going on Rose Glass directed it and she made a horror movie and this movie, the poster looked, you know, it had a gun on it. I just was never expecting it to be a crime thriller. I was expecting more of a horror thing just based on no reason other than my own preconceived notions about this writer director. So I was really surprised by it. And like at first, maybe I was a little underwhelmed. Just like, I'm like, oh, it's just kind of a standard crime thing that you've seen before. But again, it's imbued with so much style and new ideas too that it doesn't like I think it's cool that it's like a riff on already existing crime stuff, you know, instead of like this wildly original A24 movie. I was surprised that it was actually kind of a standard movie, just tweaked a little bit and made its own. And I thought that was really cool. I'm very enthusiastic. 3 out of 4. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, 3 out of 4 for me too. Obviously, I enjoyed it. It's a good time with some deeper touches and some really stylistic flourishes. I think that add to those deeper touches, like those dream sequences. Just that opening shot is so evocative, going down into the crevice, all in red, and coming out the other end on this small town. It's just looks fantastic.
And the horror element is there in terms of the horrific practical effects violence that occurs. So there is a horror element in there, but not a horror movie. But there is, you know, there is some campiness. There's some fantasy stuff that goes on. It's just like hard to quantify. And I think it's cool for that reason specifically. All right. Let's talk about a movie called One Life starring Anthony Hopkins that is kind of sneaking out into theaters right now. Did this get an award qualifying run last year or something? Or was it like, okay, feel like it was released in the other countries because maybe it was like BAFTA. I don't know. I feel like there's weird releases.
It could have been it's a UK production, so it's very possible.
Yeah. I feel like it was like, I saw people on Letterboxd reviewing, like there's tons of reviews on Letterboxd that would indicate it came out last year. And all of them say, like, my favorite one was a guy who said, Anthony Hopkins, another Oscar, calling it now. And then he edited it to say, okay, well, that didn't happen. But I guess it could happen if it qualifies in America for 2024. So we'll have to see. But the movie's called One Life, and it's a Nazi movie. Here's the trailer.
30 seconds to on air.
Okay, and you are just here.
Good night, sir. Take father back.
Now, an extraordinary story about a young man who many years ago visited Prague. What he found there were thousands of refugees at the mercy of Hitler's imminent invasion.
Do you ever think about the children and what happened to them?
I bet you got some stories.
That's really not about me.
We are working to evacuate these children by train to safety in Britain.
I don't know about you, Mark, but I spent most of this movie going, I think this would be a lot more compelling if Schindler's List did not exist already, because it feels like you're watching a watered down version of that movie with a similar plot, to the point of, I think this guy is even called like the Schindler of blank, like wherever he's from, like when you Google his name, like that is what he's associated with. So for a while, you're just like, yeah, this movie's not bad. It's just kind of perfunctory and telling a story that I've seen told better with better direction before. But I will say the tearjerker moment in this movie, or I guess I should say moments, I found them to be so affecting and undeniable that I kind of forgot by the end how perfunctory it was. And I was just crying along with the movie when I was supposed to. So part of me finds like it's cynical about that. But the other part of me is like, it works. It's a movie that sets out to make you cry. And it does. And it tells a story you probably hadn't heard before. And what is that story, Mark?
It is the story of Nicholas Winton, a real life man who, with a lot of other people, helped to get primarily Jewish children out of Czechoslovakia before and during the Nazi occupation of that country during the, just before the war started.
Because like there's this whole thing about like what Britain giving Czechoslovakia to the Nazis as like,
there's a lot
like
of a
capitulation,
yeah.
like, hey, you can have this, please don't do,
don't go further,
or whatever. Yeah, don't do World War II. Or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, please don't start another world war like you did the last time. There's a lot of that going on.
Cool story that I personally just didn't know the specifics of this story. So I was compelled by that, at least.
Okay, I was compelled by it theoretically. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, the movie's not good at telling the story.
It is not good, and the reason why is that the older Nicholas Winton is played by Anthony Hopkins, who's great in general, and he's had his late career turns as recently have been phenomenal. I can't think of an actor who's been who's aged as gracefully as he has in terms of choosing really smart roles to play and play them to perfection. I can't think of it, but he's great here, and he's playing a man who is so humble that I don't even think he knows what kind of a hero he is. He's got that sort of British stiff upper lip, but in the reverse way of like, I'm not going to make a big deal about all the heroic things I did in my life because it's really not that big of a deal. Look,
he
I just did what I had to do.
700 people, 700 children, I think.
Close to
like
that.
697 or something. But when he talks about it, all he can think of are the ones he didn't save. So he doesn't ever consider that or talk about it. You're right. He just...
Like he could
fathom.
Have done so much more that's what's on his mind. That
he
like,
can't celebrate.
He couldn't save.
Yeah, he can't celebrate any of this amazing story because he's too disconnected, feeling about I could have done more. I feel bad about that, and he doesn't want to be the story. He wants the refugees to be the story. He's just like a great. It's a movie about a great guy, and he just it goes through great pains to show you how great he is. And that didn't bother me more so than the structure of the movie going between old man Anthony Hopkins just kind of puttering about and then the backstory that is the story of the meat of the movie. It's and then eventually once it gets to the tearjerker moment that it's clearly based on and setting up, you go, okay, I get why they have the old man thing. They could have just left it as a cameo moment where he's old at the end. Like, why did it have to be Anthony Hopkins is around the whole movie? I mean, of course, you get Anthony Hopkins, you use him, sure. But in terms of the movie structure, it's insane that it just keeps cutting back to Anthony Hopkins not really doing anything until the end moment.
Yeah, that's my big problem with the movie is that it sets up this fascinating dynamic of a hero who doesn't want to even admit that he is one, and it doesn't know what to do with the character. It doesn't know what to do with him except to have him kind of go around. And I think the bigger problem, the structural issue that you mentioned, is that it almost tries to add a layer of suspense to all of the things happening in the past scenes where they're trying to get the kids out. Like, we don't know for sure. I mean, you said it, but during the movie, we don't know for sure how many kids he rescues. And there are little gimmicks, like there are X's in the scrapbook, like certain kids' face photographs have X's over them. Yeah. And like, what does that mean? We think we know what it means, but by the end, it's like, oh no, it turns out that means something else.
Yeah. So like, are they dead or were they saved?
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean?
And it's the way that the movie kind of teases us with these little things of not
telling
us the full story, even though it is taking place in Nicholas Winton's present tense, so he knows exactly how many kids he saved. Everybody knows how many kids he saved. Anybody who knows the story would care about that, would know that.
Yeah.
But the movie holds it from us, and it feels dishonest. And so when the first big tearjerker, it is important to say that there are more than one. There's more than one tearjerker.
And it's so
moment.
It's such a strong moment that like it worked for me both times. But I did think right when it happened the second time, like why wasn't this one scene? Like why did they do this?
Yeah.
Twice? It's so
it's unfortunate because the first time it got me, and I was even more cynical about the movie. But that moment is so good that it still got to me. And then when they try to repeat it again later, I'm like, why are you doing this? Why are you trying to? It's because the only thing you have is this real life thing that happened, and you recreate it and you want us all to cry at it. And like, yeah, but you can only get that once. I think that scene could only work once in this movie when But I mean, I guess if it worked for you both times, whatever.
Well, no, but it worked for me just on the base level of what it's doing. But like, you're right. I mean, you know what's happening the second time because like it's supposed to be a suspenseful moment. Then that's why it works, because you're like, oh, it's kind of like a take your breath away thing if you're not expecting it. And then the second time you're expecting it. So it didn't hit me that way, but it's still just like the power of the moment is so strong that I see why they wrote a whole bad movie around it. Like, it's such a powerful real life moment that happened beyond the like in the old man's phase of his life. It's, we're talking around it for a reason, but like, I mean, it's stupid to do because it's a real life thing that happened.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound like it would be a spoiler, but it is, and I don't.
It is kind of, because the movie does try to make you think like, why are you telling this story? Something's gonna happen here.
Yeah, why is it told from this exact moment and this exact perspective? Yeah. But that moment is strong, and that's more on, let's say, it's gonna sound weird out of context, but like, that's more on the producers of a television show than it is on this movie for why that moment works. You know what I mean? So even that feels like, yeah, it worked just because it was a powerful moment. This movie is still not quite there and kind of badly written and badly structured, but Anthony Hopkins is terrific. Helena Bonham Carter's in this, and she's good. Johnny Flynn plays young Anthony Hopkins, and he's good. Like, there's nothing wrong with those elements, but it is ultimately a 2.5-star movie that made me cry, like, which is like a rare feat, because like, it's hard to recommend. I still like, I recommend this, I don't know, like, my parents would love this movie, and like, that's fine. But I don't know. It's lacking something.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me to give it 2 stars instead of anything higher than that. So.
But you also acknowledge that moment is strong. Except
I do. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. All right. Fair enough. So we agree on that. I think we'll agree on this largely, too. This is Michael Keaton's not directorial debut. He's directed something else before that was also about a hitman, if you can believe it. This is called Knox Goes Away, directed by Michael Keaton, starring Michael Keaton, also featuring Al Pacino. Wild stuff. Here's the trailer.
I'm doing this job a long time. People like to talk about the targets. I think it made them feel better.
Why don't you care who the guy is?
They never got what it was really all about, which was, in 10 minutes, they're not going to be anybody.
Knox, you okay? Knox.
That's enough of that. It's even the trailer is low and slow and plodding, like this fucking movie is. It's a very generic premise for Knox Goes Away. I think I could sum it up real quick. Mark, tell me if I'm right. Hitman. I think it's setting up. Yeah, it's a hitman doing like a one last job type of thing. But this particular hitman just started getting dementia, and it's causing him some issues at the workplace. And then his son comes into play, and it's about him and his son, him helping his son because his son doesn't know where else to go. And there's also a boring procedural cop element that feels like the whole thing feels like a bad TV thing. It feels like bad TV.
Forgot about the cops.
Yeah, because it's the most forgettable, perfunctory, boring bullshit. I'm jealous you forgot about the cops. That's all I can think of, is how annoying that was.
It is annoying, now that in retrospect. Yeah, it is. I think I brought them up in my written review. I think I did. I think I was cognizant enough to bring them
up. At one point in time,
it is a big part of the movie. Yeah, it is a big part of the movie that these cops are looking into these two separate crime scenes that are tangentially connected. Anyway. This is such a weird movie because Keaton is good. I like Keaton's sort of quiet, introspective take on this hitman who is so like that line. I think it just came up in the trailer. That line, like, I don't care who my targets were and what they did, because like a couple minutes, none of it's going to matter. They're going to be dead. They're not going to exist anymore. I like that angle of the character. And then it just sort of turns into this weird thriller that isn't really working as a thriller because it withholds so much information about what this plan is, this plan to cover up both killings or to do something else about both killings. It's so weird. I get why they don't tell you, because they want they want you to have that level of suspense because he is losing his memory. Is he screwing up his plan, or is he actually following through on his plan, even having these lapses of memory and forgetting what he's supposed to be doing and all that? I get it, but it doesn't work because we're just there watching him do a bunch of stuff and we don't know whether or not he's supposed to be doing it or not. So there's no tension if we don't know that he's messing up or not.
There's also a thing that we haven't mentioned, which is like, again, like Memento exists and is a good movie, and this feels like it's derivative of that. And then like shittier versions of this movie exist. The movie called Memory with Liam Neeson from a couple years ago. That is also about, I don't know if he's a hitman, but it's about a guy. Is it a hitman? I don't remember.
I think it's
some guy with a gun. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a Liam Neeson movie.
These movies are so forgettable. I don't know. Or is it just appropriate?
It's appropriate. Like, that's what they are, and that's fine. I feel like Neeson was on a hot streak for a while when he was with like Jean-Claude Seurat, and now he's on like a straight to video streak that they go to theaters, but the quality of the movies are like straight to video now. And this one feels like that. It's bad. It's interminable. It's just endless, fucking endless. I have nothing good to say about it other than, yeah, you're right. Keaton's fun to watch. Marsden's fine, but the role, just like the script, is so bad. I felt bad for him. Like, Ham ended up talking about why he killed a guy and whatever. Al Pacino showing up is wild. Marcia Gay Harden showing up is wild. None of that makes this movie worth watching, though. It really feels like not even a pilot of a TV show, but like an episode, like a random episode of one. it wasn't good. Very bad movie. 1.5 stars.
Kind of like the series finale of the show that's been on for way too long or something like that. It's got, yeah, the cast, you brought up Harden and Marsden. It's got Joanna Kulig from Cold War. She's like the sex worker that Keaton's character sees every Thursday. And you can see exactly where that's going, by the way. But, who else? Ray McKinnon. I think he was in Deadwood. He's like a really solid character actor. He's there briefly. It's got like a really good cast who are doing fine work for material that just simply does not function at what it's trying to do because it screws up so much. So yeah, 1.5 for me.
Let's debunk some quotes from the poster that I see. A career best performance. I think he's good, but I'm going to go with no on that. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's good, but not. No.
The next quote is, a mind-bending, twisted journey. I mean, technically, correct, maybe, because, like, his mind is fucked up, and there's a journey that happens, but, like, it doesn't make... Those words don't mean anything in the context of, like, recommending the movie to me. Very strange. Anyway, 1.5 from both of us. Now, let's maybe disagree, I think, a little. Let's talk about Snack Shack, starring young Steven Spielberg.
How was a field trip, boys?
Yeah, we got a hand feed the giraffe.
Yeah, it's fucking eating right out of her palm.
You made this?
How old are you guys?
16.
Hey, you idiots are gonna end up on the side of a freaking milk carton.
I'm grounded. No more running free range all summer. I've got 1 week to find a legit job before my mom gets full tilt DEFCON.
We need to bag some summer jobs. You think you can hook us up?
You can ask if they need an extra hand.
With what?
That thing. Snack Shack. I think they bid it out at the city council meeting.
I want to pitch you an idea.
Okay.
You bid $2,000 on the Snack Shack at the swimming pool.
Actually, we bid $3,000.
I really thought that them bidding $3,000 when it could have cost them $300 was very funny. It's a good bit. And I kind of like this movie while acknowledging that it's a bit familiar. And then also, I don't think it falls off a cliff with what it does at the end, but it does take a sharp turn that I don't know if the movie can handle, because like it's just like a different emotional register than it was in previously. But I like this movie, if only because it showed me characters that like were arguably hard to believe. Like, they're 14-year-olds who make their own beer and party and are just hustlers and are constantly making money and finding little get rich quick schemes. But I found that endearing, mostly because Gabriel LaBelle, who you know as Sammy Fableman from The Fablemans, aka young Steven Spielberg, I think he's fun in the role and endearing, even though he's, you know, an annoying kid or whatever. I think he helps this movie go down. But I just am a sucker mark for like a coming of age movie, and specifically a coming of age summer job movie. So like Adventureland is one of my favorite movies. And this is very much trying to do Adventureland. And I don't think it comes anywhere close to that, but it's in the vein of trying to do something like that. Coming of age, teens, finding love. But the movie ends up with such a generic plot, which I'm assuming is what you took issue with, which it, when it just ends up becoming, oh, they both like the same girl. And it's a little rote maybe from there. But I found the characters likable enough that I was along for the ride, even if I thought the movie, if it were 90 minutes, I'd be much more effusive in my praise. It's a little long in the tooth, but I liked it okay. I thought it was okay.
I was very surprised, not only by you saying you enjoyed it when I saw it on Letterboxd, but a couple of other people I know and trust have said that they enjoyed this. And I'm like, what did I miss? Did I miss something? I was very tempted to watch it again just because enough people were like, oh, I really got something out of this. I just seriously sat there. I didn't believe the kids.
At first. It's an obstacle that you have to overcome for sure.
I know the 90s were not as fascinating and engaging and had as much stuff to do, but I really had a hard time believing that they were running around like out of state on field trips to gamble on the puppies.
The far-fetchedness became like part and parcel for me. I was like, okay, they're like doing bits. It's fine. But it is hard to believe.
That was it. It felt like bits. I more liked this idea of the relationship being at this point in their lives where they're 14. They've been friends for a long time. They're mainly friends out of proximity more than like sharing interests or having anything in common, really. And so that relationship is sort of on the edge of like, these two kids are figuring out who they are, and they are very different people. I think the honesty of that struck me to a certain extent. And so I kind of latched onto this relationship. But then, yeah, as soon as it becomes about they both like the same girl, and the girl is this mercurial figure who comes in, and you don't know who she likes. You don't know what she wants. You don't know any of that, because
where did shit pig even originate from?
I don't know. That was the other.
It was like she just starts with that, and it was confusing.
Yeah, it had to be something, because was it, or she knew the cousin, her cousin had a crush on him. And so she knows of him, but I don't know where the nickname comes from. It's a weird thing. I think that's sort of that gimmicky thing again. Like, yeah, we need the kid to have a nickname. Here's the nickname. She's just gonna say it and say it for the rest of the movie. Yeah. Too much of it is routine.
Yeah, it's gonna become cute enough that you know, when it becomes a third act, when they bring it back, you're gonna go, aw. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I liked it enough, but I also acknowledge that like it doesn't do anything really original with the material. I guess the originality is in, you know, the very specific nature of like running the snack shack and their entrepreneurial spirit being over the top. I guess that's where the originality comes in.
I like the swear dogs.
The swear dog is funny. So they have hot dogs. They sell a hot dog for $1 and they'll write fuck on it in ketchup.
And they'll upcharge it 75 cents.
50, yeah, it's like double the price.
Because when you're a younger kid, yeah, that is something you would do.
That is like when the movie's working for me. When they're kids scheming, doing things that feel believable to the point where I was like, I'm sure this guy who wrote this movie had this experience. Like that's how specific it felt to me, that like this guy did work in a snack shack and knows all these specific things that they did, and or maybe just a clever writer, who knows. But that stuff worked for me to the point where I think I'm gonna give this like, you know, the 2.5, 3 quasi three where like I'm recommending it. I think people will like it. There will be people that like it. There'll be people that don't like it. I'm right there in the middle. I enjoyed it, but I have elements that I take issue with, including a big third act emotional pivot,
definitely does not earn. And
it doesn't really earn that at all.
So cynical, because it is clearly just trying to make a big lesson out of everything that happened.
Yeah.
It
just doesn't need to have the sentimental thing that it thinks it needs to have at the end. Like it would have worked without it completely. But I enjoyed it enough. I think that Gabriel LaBelle was a fun performance, such a different performance than Sammy Fableman, that I'm kind of impressed with him, even though at first I was like, I don't buy this at all. I guess it won me over in that regard. And I think the girl is a good performer, Mika Abdallah. Yes. I thought she was really good, and I felt bad that she was like arguably manic pixie dream girl into this movie and just kind of existing to date both guys at the same time and just kind of not be a realistic person. But I don't know. I think this was a fun movie that you'll either get on board with or you won't. So check out the trailer, see what you think. 3 stars for me.
Okay, 2 stars for me. I did not get on board with it. And I'm very surprised, but whatever. I get it. I just couldn't connect with those characters enough. I get it. I do get it.
Soft spot for the genre. I just really like these type of movies, and it doesn't have to be a great one. I recommended
the Mark Wahlberg dog movie. I get it.
yeah. That's fair. A lot of people I know did as well, but then there's a lot of people who were like, no, this is typical Mark Wahlberg garbage. I hated this. And I'm fascinated. So maybe I'll see that too when I have a moment. All right. Now, this will be an interesting conversation. I have no big defense of this movie or anything, but I did not loathe it anywhere near as much as Mark did, and I'm delighted to hear why. Let's find out. The movie's called French Girl, and of course it stars Zach Braff as the titular French Girl, of course. No, he does not play the French Girl. It's got him. It's got Vanessa Hudgens and a French girl. Here's the trailer.
I want to talk to you about Sophie. She's the one. Check out this bling.
What?
Marrying Sophie to get Canadian citizenship. It's brilliant.
No, Dad.
I've been asked to interview for the executive chef position at the Chateau Frontenac in Quebec City.
Quebec City, Canada? A little further north.
And look at this place. 400 years of history.
Tout le monde, je présente mon chum, Gordon.
From New York, you're a Rangers fan?
Oh, I actually don't follow hockey. I love figure skating.
Figure skating?
The costumes, dazzling.
So you're the famous Ruby Collins.
And you must be Gordon. I never got your family name.
What the fuck?
Yeah, she told me she'd been with women before, but this is her ex.
The what?
She lied to you.
She didn't lie. She was protecting my feelings.
I guess I appreciate that instead of like the gay best friend, he has William Finkter dad to call. I enjoyed that. I guess. Why did you tell me about this movie and then tell me why you hated it so much?
It is. Oh my God. What is it? Okay.
I mean, the plot is laid out right there.
Yeah. The plot laid out. It's guy, insecure guy. Is worried that his current girlfriend might be attracted to her ex-girlfriend, and the ex-girlfriend has given her a big job opportunity, and so he's worried about that. And he's staying with her family the whole time, so he gets to be weird and get chased by a swan.
It's pathetic.
It's pathetic. That's what it is.
Is it because it rips scenes wholesale from other movies? Like, this movie has a whole section that feels like it's just Wedding Crashers. Like, there's the hunting scene, but like just the whole nature of it feels very Wedding Crashers. And also there's other movies it reminded me of that I don't know if I wrote it down, but like it just feels like it's doing such rom-com tropes that it can't help but feel like it's ripping off scenes wholesale from other stuff.
It's doing that. It's also doing very weird things, including a lengthy scene of corpse desecration.
Oh yeah, it has tonal imbalance in terms of its humor. It seems to be like Zach Braff doing silly things and being like, I'm obsessed with figure skating and not hockey. Like, he's a caricature, not a real person. And then it also goes for we're gonna go really hard with the corpse humor, and it also has chased by a swan humor. Like, it's just all over the place.
It's so
and I guess okay. So you just really were so every joke.
The other thing
pissed
is,
you off.
Okay, look. Here we go. Here. I'm just gonna lay it out here. Time comes for us all. It does. It does come for us all. Zach Braff in his 20s can play like the weird, awkward, insecure guy who does a bunch of weird stuff to try to keep the girlfriend because he's an insecure loser and he doesn't want to lose the girlfriend. We've all been there in our 20s. In your 30s, you might have some remnants of that stuff. And yeah, it's awkward, but whatever. Zach Braff is in his 40s now, and he looks it, and that's not, and again, time comes for us all. It's fine. Whatever. He's doing the stuff that he could have maybe gotten away with in his 20s. He's trying to do it here. And I know he didn't write or direct this movie, but they cast him in this movie playing Braff in his 20s instead of reality check. He's in his 40s. He looks like he's in his 40s. And this looks really pathetic. And I just really hated having this supposedly adult man who should have at least some of his shit together doing this stuff.
It was just like insecure with his relationship.
It was so annoying.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
That's a big part of it for me.
It's just a typical rom-com. It's a typical rom-com where Zach Braff, fish out of water, has to go live with his French girlfriend's family in Quebec City. And, you know, ultimately it's going to lead to a big change where they live there forever and she has a new job, maybe. So it's just all tropey. And then, once the ex comes in, well, first of all, the movie treats the ex thing like a reveal when it's very obvious from the beginning, which is also annoying. But of course, his character is too stupid to figure it out for a while. Also.
Yeah.
I guess it's dumb and stupid. I don't know. I gave it 2 stars. So I was just like, what's the difference? You know, a huge gulf sometimes between a 1 and a 2, but, I'm trying to think of why I gave it a 2 instead of a 1. It just didn't bother me. I just thought it was not very good, but it didn't bother me. Zach Braff. I was a Scrubs fan. I don't dislike Zach Braff, as much as a lot of people do. I think he's annoying. I think Garden State's probably hasn't aged well. I don't know. I was never big on that. I'm not a huge fan of his writer director stuff. I think that movie he just did with Morgan Freeman and Florence Pugh was kind of okay and good.
Yeah,
good
we enough. Both. I think we both liked
it fine.
I did. I think you did too.
Yeah, I don't know. I have nothing against the guy. I don't particularly like the guy.
Yeah, it's nothing in general. It's just like you. There comes a point where you can't play the characters that you're in your 20s without it looking pathetic. And this character looks pathetic, and I couldn't stand it.
That's so funny. I love that it pissed you off that much.
It pissed me off a lot, especially when it started doing all the stupid corpse stuff and all that. Like, why? Yeah, so 1 star.
Yeah,
that feels generous, but 1 star.
Wow. All right. 1 star for French Girl on the list. Keep a lookout for, I don't think Mark does worst of the year lists, but it would be on there.
There's a good chance it would be on there. Please let this be like the worst thing I see all year. Please.
I would love that for me if this was the worst thing I saw all year. Actually, it was not even the worst thing I saw this week. I feel like I liked Knox Goes Away worse or less than this. Let's watch the trailer for Animal Kingdom. A very boring movie that annoyed me and confounded me. Here's the trailer.
T'as vu le retard qu'on a déjà?
Genre c'est ma faute.
Attends, tu te fous de moi? Attends, Emile. Oh. T'arrêtes ton cirque, c'est quoi ton problème? J'ai pas envie de discuter. Oh.
C'est une mutation.
C'est un phénomène récent. Complexe et jamais volontiers, on comprend pas tout.
C'est ta mère, Emil.
Ça t'a fait quoi quand maman elle a commencé à changer?
Faut me faire confiance, on va la retrouver.
Lala!
What if X-Men didn't care about the mutants at all and was a domestic drama? That's what this movie feels like. It introduces this really cool world of hybrid human animals that are uncanny and uncomfortable and weird looking, and the makeup looks pretty cool, but I don't think it does anything interesting with it, and I was just bored out of my mind. What did you think of this movie?
Yeah,
and what is it?
It's a parable about prejudice set in the domestic drama of a sci-fi hook. I know it's so mind-blowing that this movie in which
that's
people transform into animals and that are hated by greater society and feared for no apparent reason.
What if society treated people like animals? Interesting. I hadn't considered.
What if? Hmm. Yeah. So you're right. It is kind of annoying. I liked that it has this grounded feel that it is about primarily this father-son relationship. The father is, his wife turns into a wolf, and so he puts her away into this facility because the wife attacks the son and the son feels as if, the father has thrown away his mother and also that his mother is no longer human. And there's some nice stuff going on just in terms of that drama and that being the focus. But then it is just oh, what if people were animals? How would people react? Well, they wouldn't react that well, apparently, and we all know that.
Yeah, it'd be weird. People would be like, what? I don't know. You don't want to say the word racist is wrong, but people would be speciest. Animalist, speciest towards speciest. Others, speciest. My notes just say metaphor ... support your furry son. Metaphor. It's just the coming of age thing ultimately too, and about accepting who you are, kind of, in a way. I don't know. It just, again, I reference X-Men because, like, it's ideas that other things have done, X-Men and beyond, that have, you know, you've seen in other pop culture that have actually wrestled with the material in ways that are more interesting than, like, this really grounded story that ultimately is trying to be grounded while also being like an all-encompassing metaphor, and it just is boring. It's just high concept premise that's deadly boring is all I got out of this.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what the two central performances are good. There's this thing with a Birdman that I found kind of worthwhile, that, you know, mm-hmm. this guy transforms into a bird and he's trying to learn to fly, and the kid teaches him, like, how to fly, basically.
What's that a metaphor for?
I don't know. Being yourself. Like, I don't know.
I'm just saying, it's one of those movies where every scene feels like that. We're like, okay, what's that supposed to be? What's that?
Yeah, what does that mean? What's the implication of that? What am I supposed to take away from that? And it is that.
It's annoying.
What about the teenage girl who likes the fact that he's very hairy? Like, what are we supposed to take from that? Is that a furry
What am I supposed to take away from that? Yeah, I think it is.
I don't know. I think it might be. I don't. It's so on the nose. There's no layers to this. It's just prejudice is bad. This is what people are like when they're prejudiced. Don't be prejudiced, because there are people, and people have feelings, and people have worth and all that. Like, yes, we know, like, we get it. You just did this whole elaborate world building exercise just to tell us that. It's annoying.
Yeah. I'll give them the makeup, though. It's pretty cool. The creature designs and the makeup are cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like it doesn't overutilize CGI, and it does, like, feel like you're looking at practical stuff all the time. So there's that. But it's definitely a 2-star movie that I didn't know what to do with, really. I was just really bored.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Two for you as well.
2 stars for both of us. Yep.
All right. And now let's talk about Club Zero, the final movie of the week.
Protecting the environment is extremely important to me.
For me, this course is all about self-control.
Conscious eating strengthens and purifies our bodies.
Wow. Are you really gonna eat all that?
Abra, please, can you just eat something for a change?
I'm eating consciously.
I was with this for a while, but it is kind of just a one joke thing that does the thing the whole time, and kind of feels like it's, I found this to be annoying too, because it's fun. I wrote down annoying for a lot of movies this week. This had, like, ticks that I would describe as like trying to be Wes Anderson-y, or even maybe more like Yorgos Lanthimos-y too. It just feels like it's trying to crib style from other stuff while making this, like, reactionary point about indoctrination and how, you know, your kid can be indoctrinated by a teacher, and, like, kind of making comparisons between cults and schooling. So, like, there's reactionary stuff that I feel like maybe if you think about it too much, you'd be like, is this, like, a super right wing thing? But I don't think it's actually that. I just think it's a silly satire about the industry of, you know, diets and stuff like that. And it was funny and interesting for a bit it lost me somewhere. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, it lost me big time. And I did latch on to that sort of reactionary tinge. You know, you've brought up the guy who did, what's his name? Christopher Borgoli, who did, Borgoli. He did Dream Scenario and, the good one.
Sick of Myself.
Thank you. Sick of Myself. Yeah. Dream Scenario is good too. Sorry. It was just Sick of Myself.
Very good. It's also
really felt, it was Sick of Myself really felt like a big calling card versus Dream Scenario, because we saw that one first. Anyway,
yes.
You bring up occasionally that he feels sort of in that reactionary mold. Jessica Hausner, her last film, I think, was called Little Joe, and that was about depression and pharmaceuticals, and it sort of had that little tinge to it too, like kind of if you have depression, get over it sort of thing, don't rely on medication. And so what this one is about the education system and about a teacher literally indoctrinating kids based on their fears about climate change and identity and all of this other stuff. I'm like, is this seriously like Moms for Liberty sort of propaganda just hidden in this sort of cutesy thing? I latched onto it enough that I was suspicious of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's mostly, I'm just going to say it's mostly because the joke, it's a one joke movie. It doesn't go anywhere with it except the most obvious things, which,
you know, and every scene is shot the same, and it drove me nuts. Yeah. Like the slow zooms into everybody. I'm just like, oh, enough. I had enough of looking at this movie at a certain point.
Yeah, I did too. It doesn't have anything to say about these things. Like all the kids cling to this idea of starvation for different reasons, but that none of them, they don't have anything to say. Like one of them gets into it because of peer pressure, even though he says like, this is stupid, I don't believe any of this stuff, but the kids convince him to do it. One of them is already bulimic, and so she just kind of switches from bulimia to anorexia. I'm trying to think what else.
Hilarious.
The kid's parents is doing nonprofit work in Ghana, and so he feels alone and isolated, and the teacher takes him out in a very unprofessional way that I think the movie really doesn't like latch onto. Like if this stuff was happening in a school, people would notice, and they do notice, but nothing happens because the point is that it is this thing about the indoctrination. It's just,
there's the kid who gets a scholarship if he does it. So he has to do it for that reason. Like, fighting food industry and capitalism, and, you know, no one would starve from being poor if we all ate like this and stuff like that. Yeah. And it just feels like, okay, you set your target and you are making fun of a bunch of ideas. And then it just does the same thing for 90 to 100 minutes or whatever it is. And it has its moments.
I remember it being long.
Yeah. Maybe it's longer than that. And then it ends where you think it's going to, kind of, I would say, in terms of like, it's doing a cult thing. Where is this going to end? So I would say, it's just like a pitch black comedy to me that doesn't necessarily work because it just feels too much I don't know, is it the political dogma I'm putting on it, or it just feels too much like it's making fun of what it's talking about? I don't know. It's the reactionary shit that doesn't come
up. It is, yeah.
Sometimes I find that provocative.
Sorry, it's always hard to tell with these things.
Yeah, sometimes I find it provocative and interesting when things are reactionary. And, like, great point, sir. But this one, I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I guess it would be easy to do that to kids. But, like, why would you do that? Like, I don't know. I don't know why it didn't connect. But Mia Wasikowska is always fun to watch. I like her, but I didn't like this movie, really. And I guess it's probably because it feels like it's like if you put this on Fox News, people would love it type of thing.
Yeah, which I don't necessarily want to hold against it. Like you could make a conservative leading movie. That's fine. It could be good even.
Yeah. So
you got to make a good movie first.
Yeah.
We've talked about what's his name. We've talked about this.
Craig Zoller. Dragged across concrete.
That's a really good movie because it's about characters and it's about this really interesting bank heist thriller that you don't expect and played out in a really interesting way. But it is very much a reactionary movie, but it works because it works as a movie first and foremost. So
yeah, this just feels like a pale imitation. It feels like Diet Yorgos. It really does to me.
Yes,
it really feels like Lobster-esque era Yorgos, but it doesn't work all the way. It's 2 stars for me because I think there's some interesting ideas in it, but it doesn't the movie didn't work, so it's 2 stars for me.
1.5 for me, so slightly less favorable.
It would have been really easy to give it 0 and make a Club Zero joke, but we didn't do that because we have integrity.
It's too obvious. Come on,
too obvious, just like Club Zero. All right, we'll be back next week with several movies. I think it's actually way less than are on the slate for this week, and I actually think I've seen almost all of them already, so that's great news. We'll be back next week. Enjoy Alien Ant Farm. Goodbye.
The show starts in one.
Shut up. Ush.